It is a Friday edition of the Sports Rush. We take you into your sports weekend, and that work week is done. Put it away, put it in the rearview mirror, and away we go. 2 hours of local sports fix right here on the Sports Rush, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch. Coming up this hour, we've got Justin Cohn for the Journal-Gazette to give us a preview of the Comets and Allen American series, which starts tonight down in Texas. He'll be along at 5:20. Also, just sitting here looking at the weather situation, of course, last hour we had a tornado warning, and there's some videos that have been posted that are rather frightening when you see that it is a real tornado that is on the ground that was causing damage down in Jay County, and hopefully everybody is okay, but we do know there's been damage done to some houses and property down in Jay County. Now, that storm continues to move mostly east-southeast, and now it extends from an area between Portland and Winchester all the way over to Bellefontaine, Ohio. So it is kind of moving out of the Fort Wayne area, but it is a scary sell. So if you happen to be listening to us on the outskirts of our signal, please take it serious and be prepared to take cover, because that's a pretty dangerous storm. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Give us whatever is on your mind for this Friday. And Brad Stevens has moved up from coach in Boston to the guy making the decisions, now being the general manager. And Brad Stevens has wasted no time in making changes to the Boston Celtics roster. And I wonder if this is maybe in some ways related to his time as a coach, because he makes an interesting deal here. Kemba Walker, who never seemed to be the guy that Boston hoped he would be in Boston, is dealt away, and they get rid of that awful contract that they were stuck with, it appeared, in Boston. And it clears that money, and they get in return Al Horford, who is a very popular and productive Boston Celtics player. I think this is a good deal for Boston, mostly because of the money transfer, maybe more so than the talent transfer. But I think Al Horford's a good piece to get back if you're trying to unload salary and get rid of Kemba Walker. I wasn't sure how many teams would be willing to step up and take on that bad contract that is tied in with Kemba Walker. I think he's, what, $30, $35 million? And you get Al Horford back. I think it's a pretty good deal for the Celtics. And no hesitation, Brad Stevens already pulling the lever and getting a deal done in Boston. And your initial thoughts on this deal?
I mean, I don't know that they really got good pieces out of it, but they did need to get rid of Kemba Walker's contract, so I can't blame that. But, I mean, you got some guys who are also some also-rans, essentially.
Well, a little bit, but more affordable, and a piece that Boston needed. If you're going to build around Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and if you're planning on keeping Marcus Smart, what do you need? You need front line, right? And so if you're going to get rid of Kemba Walker, who's a front line guy you can get and trade Walker's contract to a team that it can absorb that contract? And I think they found the perfect dance partner, got it done with Oklahoma City. I don't think at this point it's a bad deal. I mean, if you weigh it on talent, you could say, not too sure. But if you weigh it on what Boston was trying to accomplish in making this move, which was, you know, they're obviously guard heavy. They need somebody who can go in and rebound with them. Al Horford's a versatile guy. You know, you can play him as a four. You can play him as a five. He can guard a five. And so he gives you that versatility. The other thing Horford did and has done is, who does he defend really well? He defends Joel Embiid. And if you're going to look at that division and you're going to say, what do we need? We need somebody that's going to be able to guard people in our division. And you need somebody that's going to match up with Joel Embiid, because I don't think he's going anywhere out of Philadelphia. I don't think this hurts Boston. I mean, that's one of those coaching moves where maybe you don't look at the overall rating as far as talent, but you look at the skill set and what it does for your basketball team and matchups against teams that you want to beat head-to-head. And that's why I think Boston did okay here. And they freed up some money that they can then have available to probably pay guys like Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown. And, of course, Jason Tatum, he's already on his deal, isn't he? I think Tatum already signed his deal. So I don't think it's a bad move, but Brad Stevens already wheeling and dealing in Boston. Hey, I was thinking about this. We've got the Home Run Derby coming up, and man, it has been so exciting as far as home runs in Major League Baseball, seeing some of the young talent that's got this home run power. Vladdy Guerrero Jr. in Toronto, he's just been one of those guys that has brought fans to the seats, fans to the television sets, much like Fernando Tatis Jr. has done with the San Diego Padres. Those two are just belting home runs. Fernando Tatis Jr. had a big one last night against the Cincinnati Reds. It was Wade Miley who was cruising along with a no-hitter in the sixth inning in a 0-0 game, and Fernando Tatis Jr. jumped in and hit a home run over the center field wall to make it a 1-0 Padres lead. That game was pretty exciting all the way to the finish. But I started to think about the names that might be available for this year's Home Run Derby. And, you know, we've had some blah home run derbies over the years, but I think we could, if these guys all step up, and what we learned is Shohei Ohtani has agreed to be part of the Home Run Derby. We would, I think, expect Fernando Tatis Jr. to be in the Home Run Derby. Well, that would mean Vladimir Guerrero Jr. would be in the Home Run Derby, I would think. And you start putting guys like Acuna from Atlanta, Juan Soto, you know, and then the list goes on with guys like Pete Alonso, who's won this thing. Anthony Rizzo, he could be a guy that could hit some bombs. Aaron Judge, Jesse Winker has just been on fire for the Reds. Most people that even if follow baseball probably don't know the name Jesse Winker, but he's been one of the best home run hitters in the game this year. And then you've got like Mike Trout, whether or not he would participate in a home run derby. But you've got a list of guys when you start saying, okay, we want eight of our home run hitting best in this contest. Man, they could put together a pretty impressive list of big bombers here. Could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, with Ohtani already committed, if they can get Vlad Jr. and Tatis, I think you have enough people just right there alone to get people interested to watch. I mean, no home run derby last year. Ratings have been kind of a dud the past couple of years. This would be an opportunity for Major League Baseball to really attract the casual fan.
Yeah, because I think
Ohtani attracts the casual fan, and Tatis does, and you know, Vlad Jr. Like, people recognize that, you know, the last name with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. So they have an opportunity here. They just have to capitalize on it.
It's a great chance to showcase your stars, your future stars and current stars of baseball. And that's the thing that's nice about baseball right now, is so much of the real talent in the game is very young talent. And the fact that these guys have names from their fathers who played makes it even more appealing, because guys in my generation remember Fernando Tatis and remember Vladdy Guerrero. And now you've got their kids that are bringing a younger fan up into the game, and they're excited to watch them. I think it would be a terrific home run derby. Could be a dream home run derby lineup if you can put them together. And where's the home run derby after they pulled the All-Star game from Atlanta? I would think people would line up to be in this home run
True.
Derby.
True. I didn't even think about it. It's in Denver, right?
It's in Coors Field, Denver, yeah. Colorado. I mean, pop-ups could be home runs. You could put on a real show in this home run derby. The fact that it's in Denver, that's why I think so many of these guys are going to go ahead and participate, because, you know, you're going to have a big number of home runs just because of the ballpark and the high altitude. So why not? Let's do it. You know, we talked about this yesterday, and I've heard more and more about it today. I think actually we've been on this story for a couple of days about the big mess going on in Big D with Mark Cuban, and the fact that he's got a guy now in his front office that is supposed to be a consultant, some type of an analytics consultant, and just relay information through the general manager and to the coach based on analytics. And apparently Mark Cuban has become so high on the information that this guy is able to gather and collect and forward that he has gotten more and more power within the organization. And there are some, including Luka Doncic, that at one point questioned whether or not this guy was coaching the team or if Rick Carlisle was coaching the team, because a lot of these analytics are based on what guy will have the most favorable matchup against what defender and certain out-of-bounds plays that would be most successful against certain defenses. I mean, there's all types of numbers that he can come up with this algorithm. And and formula that he's put together online. And so, but what's happened is now you've got Donnie Nelson is gone. And it seems to me that that has resulted from a conflict between general manager or in this case, the president of basketball operations, Donnie Nelson, who's been there years and years in Dallas, and this guy. And then the very next day, Rick Carlisle doesn't even ask to be fired. I mean, he just steps away and he quits. And I just think there's problems. And the fact that Mark Cuban was asked about this guy's involvement in the front office and whether it's causing a rift in the front office, and Mark Cuban's response to it was, that's BS, except he did not abbreviate. And just the fact that, you know, you get the owner coming out saying something like that, you've got the vice president of basketball operations, president of basketball operations, Donnie Nelson, I'm not sure his exact title, but the guy's been running the organization for years. And then you've got the coach that quits. It just seems to me like, man, there's problems in Dallas. And Luka Doncic might be holding the chip here because, you know, he can kind of decide in another year or so what his future is going to be, whether or not he extends and stays with Dallas, or whether or not he decides to become a free agent and look for an opportunity elsewhere. Now, clearly in Dallas, you're talking about, what, $200 million over 5 years? I mean, that's some powerful money. But what is it if he leaves Dallas? It's still going to be, what, $165, $170 million?
I mean, for him to leave, you get less money. So it's in his best interest to stay. And revamping the franchise, I mean, yeah, there's some weird ties there. But, I mean, Rick Carlisle was there for a long time. Donnie Nelson was there for a long time. It's not like, you know, these guys came in and completely failed. It's maybe it was just time for a change. And I understand that's maybe taking the organization side, but, you know, sometimes people just need to move on. And I think Rick Carlisle felt he just needed to move on and wouldn't be surprised if Boston comes calling.
Yeah, I know. And that's what I was going to start to ask the question is, who would end up where? Rick Carlisle, probably not coming back to Indiana. But I think the Boston situation might be a perfect situation for Rick Carlisle. I think the Boston situation might be a perfect situation for Terry Stotts. I don't know what Brad Stevens is looking for in a coach, but it seems interesting that a lot of these open positions are staying open as if somebody is waiting for a first domino to fall before they react. Like maybe, you know, maybe you've got a team that wants to hire a guy, but that guy's saying, no, we're not going to, you know, make a decision. We're going to wait and see what someplace else does or something like that, because nobody is moving quickly on filling coaching vacancies. And so it'll be interesting if Carlisle's the first one to go, if Stotts. And then I think also you've got a little bit of a holdout because of Budenholzer in Milwaukee. I think there's a lot of people that speculate that Budenholzer will become available should Milwaukee not get past the Brooklyn Nets. And that's another good coach that I think will be in demand for some of these open positions. And so we kind of wait and see who's going to match up where and who's going to end up in what position. But there's some good jobs out there. Portland being open, Boston being open. You've got, of course, the Pacers. You've got New Orleans now available. Dallas is now open. A lot of good jobs that are out there right now in the NBA. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Still coming up on the show, we've got an update for you on the U.S. Open. We'll tell you what's happening out at Torrey Pines. Also, NBA, we know we've got at least one Game 7 lined up this weekend. Will we have two more? Well, that depends on what happens tonight. We'll talk about previews of Philly, Atlanta, Utah Clippers. And coming up next, it's Justin Cohn from the Journal Gazette. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Back on the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. Don't forget, coming up tonight, we've got Tincast Baseball here on 1380 The Fan and over on our sister station, 1190 WoWo and 107.5 FM. It is Comet Hockey against the Allen Americans. Game one of the Western Conference Finals. Shane Alberani has the call live from Dallas, from Allen, Texas. You know, this is not a remote broadcast. This is Shane actually at the rink, live and in person, bringing you the call of the Comets and Allen Game 1 tonight. And to talk about a preview of this series, plus a look back at what happened with the Wichita series, we're joined now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline from the Journal-Gazette. It's Justin Cohn. And first off, Justin, as much as it pains me to do so, I must give you credit because you called the Oliver Cooper addition to the Comets roster on Monday. You thought he was a guy that maybe could jump in and contribute, and boom, 2 minutes and some odd seconds into the game, he's got the Comets up 1-0. Great call.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I like what he brings to the ice. He brings a lot of speed and energy and really helps them on that forecheck. And, you know, when they're at their best, that's what they're doing, is they're forechecking deep. But, you know, sometimes you just got to put some faith in the young guys and hope they don't take bad penalties.
Well, and that's the thing, is you can have faith in the young guys, but having faith in the young guys in a Game 5 in a do-or-die situation, credit to everybody that goes around, because you called it, and Coach Boudreaux went ahead and made that call, and it turned out to pay off for the Comets. Ultimately, I don't know that much separated the Comets and Wichita. What was the difference in the series, if there was one?
There was not a whole lot different. You know, they were very similar teams, and you know, I think having the three games on home ice, I think that really does help for a lot of reasons. And but at the end of the day, I think it came down to, you know, your gritty players stepping up, and by gritty, I mean not just the guys who will get their noses dirty, but also guys who have some experience in big games. So, you know, even though it's like Matthew Bowden has the overtime winner, I mean, this is a guy that won three championships in college. So it's not like he had no experience in big games. And, you know, Cooper's another guy. You know, he won a lot of championships at the same place in college. So I think that's why they put together the team the way they did, with a lot of guys who had experience in leadership roles and winning championships.
And you mentioned it, you wrote about it, the college connection. And so many of these guys not only had success in college, they had success at the same place in college. And the Comets have kind of developed a pipeline now of talent that has really paid off.
Yeah, it's funny because nobody's really sure who to give the credit to for that. And what I wrote, and I think it really goes back to Ben Boudreaux. He was on a trip with his wife, and you know, he really was really interested in Matt Bowden's, and drove to his hometown and took some time out to like really recruit him. And I do know, remember there were a lot of teams trying to get Bowden's at the time, and so he was basically the first signing, and then he had a good experience, and then you know, a bunch of his teammates started coming. So is that all because of Boudreaux? Is it Bowden's recruiting guys that he knows? Is it the coach at UNB telling people to come here? Is it his son who's an agent that represents these guys? So there's a lot of different factors into it, but at the end of the day, there's five guys from one college team on this Comets team now.
Comets and Allen, and it's been a while since we've seen these two on the ice together, and they've not seen each other this year, but there is some familiarity. Comets have some former Allen players. Is that any kind of a variable in this series? Does it matter that the Comets might have that slightest of edges?
I think it really does have a big impact. You know, Justin Cablemaster, the backup goalie, he was with Allen a month ago. So he knows a lot of the systems that they use this season. He knows the tendencies of their shooters. And then, you know, Boca and Pichiro, you know, they would have a good beat on the systems and some of the personnel too. So, you know, Steve Martinson, their coach, he's been at this forever. He's got a long history with the Comets, a lot of colorful games. And I think any insight that you can have into what his mindset would be with this particular roster, I think is a good thing.
Ben Boudreaux kind of indicated to me that he didn't think one goalie could get through a 5-game in 6-night stretch. And kind of, I got the idea that he was kind of looking to pick or choose a spot where Cablemaster might be able to play against his former team. Do you expect it to be this weekend at Allen, or would that more likely happen later in the series?
Me personally, I just think it would really be shocking to see Cablemaster. That's what I think, whatever Ben's saying. I mean, they took some steps here. They flew Ferguson while everybody else took the bus to make sure that he was rested. So I think they would only, you know, deviate from that if they had to. Like, Ferguson just can't go, or he's really not playing well. But to answer your question, I would say probably game two would be the window to me, because that would, but that all depends on what happens tonight. You know, I mean, if they win, does that make it easier? Does that make it more difficult? You know, it's really tough to tell, but in a best of five series, every game is so important. So it's just hard for me to imagine them making a switch unless they just absolutely had to.
Do the Comets have to get one out of two? Is there a chance with three straight at home after these two games in Allen that they could still come back from a 0-2 deficit?
Yeah. I mean, you know, the old saying, until you lose on home ice, I mean, there's really, you're in fine shape. But that would really be a tough order, because just thinking of the schedule and what they've been through with all this travel, to ask them to have to win three straight games on three straight nights, even on home ice, I mean, that's a tall order. But I personally wouldn't sit here if they've lost a couple games and they're close on Saturday night and say, oh, the series is over, just because, you know, home ice means that much in hockey.
What's this come down to? When you look at the two rosters, you look how they're playing lately, what do you see as some of the keys to the series?
Well, the big thing is Allen has two just monster defensemen. Les Lancaster, one defenseman of the year. Matt Register has won that award before. Those are guys that are like MVP caliber guys, depending on the year. And they both, you know, they put up huge points. They're both big guys. So I think the big thing is, what kind of sacrifice is Fort Wayne going to be willing to make? Because those guys are going to get shots from the blue line a lot. So you have to be willing to block those shots. But you also have to not get fooled, because they'll fake you out, fake a shot, and then, you know, send a quick pass and to somebody else, and then it's in. So I think that's the single biggest thing that we have to watch, is what do they do with those two guys? But the good news is, in the last series, Dean Stewart, who is another one of those guys, really didn't do much in the first few games before he got hurt. And Anthony Beauregard, that was the league MVP, and he had a nice series, but he was pretty contained. So I feel like Fort Wayne has done a pretty good job lately of shutting down the stars of opposing teams.
Talking to Justin Cohen about the Comets and the Allen Americans. You know, you talk about the Allen power play and how, you know, they've got that point shot that can really be a key to the power play. What about other special teams? What about the Comets power play? How was that in the Wichita series? How important will it be in this series against Allen? And it, like I said, we've already kind of talked about the penalty kill for the Comets and how important that is when you go up with a team that's got that guy at the point. But what about the Comets power play?
Yeah, it didn't look great in the first round. They were 2 of 17. So one of the things I was, you know, saying in the paper was they really need to get Brandon Hawkins going, especially on the power play. But in terms of the matchup, it's really similar to the last series, in which both teams have great power plays. Fort Wayne's got a really good penalty kill, but Allen's penalty kill is kind of meh. So if Fort Wayne can get some goals on the power play, then that would bode well for them. But beyond that, I mean, they're really just closely matched teams in just about every category that you can think of.
Is Allen playing as well as anybody in the league?
100%. They've won 9 in a row. If you think back to the final 2 weeks of the regular season, it looked like Wichita was going to win the conference title, because they had just defeated Fort Wayne. And Allen, really, they just had to win out and get some help, and that's exactly what they did. So they were the hottest team coming into the playoffs. They looked pretty good against Utah. So, yeah, they're firing on all cylinders. But the one thing to note is they've been off for a week. And Fort Wayne was playing on Monday. So you can see that as an advantage or a disadvantage, depending on who you talk to.
Of course, you nailed it on your first-round prediction. You said Comets in 5. So more credit to Justin Cohen from the Journal-Gazette for that correct pick. So let's go to a pick for this series. What do you see this one coming down to?
I picked Allen in 5. Coming into the playoffs, I had picked Allen to win the whole thing, and I thought they would win this series in 4, but at the time, I didn't know it would be another 2-3 series. So I think that helps Fort Wayne a little bit, but it's tough for me to imagine Fort Wayne getting past Allen with the way they've been playing.
All right, Justin, we appreciate it as always, and we'll look for your coverage on Twitter tonight. Of course, keeping everybody update at Sports Icon, and of course, online or in the paper at the Journal Gazette. Thanks, Justin.
All right, thanks.
Yep, Justin Cohn joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline tonight. It's the Comets and Allen. And Shane Almirante is in Allen, Texas. He'll give us the call tonight on our sister station, 1190 WOWO and 107.5 FM. Always great getting the updates from Justin Cohn. I did find it fascinating. The Comets have like five players from the same college that all just keep coming in. And they're young talent. They're experienced, though. They go to this college because they see it as the transition from maybe juniors or younger, whether they're at high school level. But they see it as the kind of the transition before they decide where and who they can play with in the professional ranks. And this is one of the top programs you're going to find anywhere. And the Comets just keep picking guys out of there, and they're doing really well. And it started with Matt Bowden's, our guest on the show a couple days ago. And he's been able to talk to guys that he played with at this college and highly recommend them coming to Fort Wayne. They do. And it's worked out really well for both sides. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862, we'll be back. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. First, we'll take this moment to wish a happy Father's Day to all of our dads that are out there listening today. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. 46862. It made me think, with this being Father's Day weekend, about some of the great father-son duos in sports. And, you know, we talked earlier, Caleb, about Fernando Tatis Jr. and his dad, Fernando Tatis, both great Major League Baseball players. And I think Tatis Jr. is going to easily surpass his father. And then you've got Vladdy Guerrero Jr., who's starring now for Toronto. And, of course, his father, who was a great player for many years with the Angels, Vladimir Guerrero. And so I started to think, who are the best father-son combos in sports? Now, there's one that comes to mind, and I think the reason they come to mind so quickly is because they're that rare father-son duo that actually played together. That would be the Griffeys. Ken Griffey and Ken Griffey Jr. But when you start to talk just in general, father-son duos, and I guess you could judge them based on talent or popularity. I don't know exactly what criteria you would use, but great father-son combinations in sports, and I guess it doesn't even have to be a duo because you'd have to include the Mannings with Archie Manning, Eli, and Peyton then as the sons. And gosh darn it, let's go ahead and include Cooper because he's pretty darn funny when he does his NFL clips.
And not too long, probably going to have to include Arch Manning, who's Cooper's son.
Yeah.
Because he is
generation.
One of the most highly touted quarterback prospects. I think the class of 2023? It's not next
year.
He's
got a couple of
years
to go.
Yeah.
And then I thought about the NBA, and you've got the Currys with Steph and Seth and Del Curry, their father. And so, you know, famous combinations. Of course, Klay Thompson with Michael Thompson, his father. He was a great Laker, the dad. And, of course, Klay Thompson with the Golden State Warriors. But thinking of combinations of father-sons. Now, you also, you know, Vladdy Guerrero Jr. has a teammate there in Toronto, Bo Bichette, Dante Bichette, his father. That's another good combination of a father-son duo. But who do you have? Let us know. 46862 is the Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Who do you have as some of the great father-son combinations in the history of sports? I thought about golf because there are a few in golf, but not many. Like Haas, Nicklaus didn't really have any success, but Haas would be one that comes to mind, I guess. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head because I'm not looking at
Ryan,
a
list. Ryan Eaton just tweeted us the Bonds. So Bobby Bonds and Barry Bonds.
Oh,
that's a
Ryan,
great one.
You're on top of it, man. How
yeah.
did we not think of that one?
I don't know.
See, sometimes doing this off the top of your head, the obvious gets by you. But yeah, that's another one. So go ahead and let us know on our text line, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Great combinations of father-son duos in sports. And, you know, I know there's some, like guys that didn't even play the same sport. Like, what about Mahomes? Father was a longtime pitcher in Major League Baseball. Now Patrick Mahomes, quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think you'd have to put them on the list. So, you know, there's some that aren't even in the same sport. But who do you have? Let us know. 46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. All right, so the U.S. Open is taking place right now. And that's at Torrey Pines. And, you know, earlier today I was listening to the updates that we have here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. And we'll keep you updated all weekend long on what's happening in U.S. Open tournament play out in Southern California. But there was a complete no-name. I mean a complete no-name that made it onto the top of the leaderboard. Richard Bland. I mean, even his name is bland. I mean, now you're talking about a no-name. It's like his name is rather bland. Yes, it is. Richard Bland. And then you've got Louis Oosthuizen. Came in at even par today and is 4-under for the tournament. Russell Henley, he had that 4-under yesterday. And what we said yesterday, Caleb, but of course our predictions have been a little off. But we said yesterday Russell Henley had no chance of winning this tournament. He's hanging around. He was even par today and he's still at 4-under par. Brooks Koepka is 2-under after four holes today. He has moved within a shot of the lead at 4-under. And Bubba Watson made a move today. He shot a 4-under par and is now 3-under for the tournament. But guess, you know, when you start to look at those guys sitting there, that 3-under range, you've got John Rahm, you've got Xander Schauffele. Trying to see some of the other guys on the leaderboard. Is it just, Bryson DeChambeau, he's 2-under today and shot a 69. That puts him at even par through the first 2 days. I think anybody that's probably even or even one over is probably going to be within range to make a run over the weekend. Now, when you talk about one over, guess who's there? Lee Westwood, my guy. I've picked him for almost every major for the last 8 years here on the Sports Rush. He's at one over. He shot a one over today, so he's consistent. An even par yesterday, a 1-over 72 today. Lee Westwood at one over, but that's tied with Rory McIlroy, who shot a 73 today. He's also one over. So anyway, those are some of the scores. Of course, like I said, we've got updates all weekend long. I'm trying to find Mickelson. Dustin Johnson was 2-over today with a 73. He's now 2-over for the tournament. But, you know, I think if you go 2-3-over, you start to put yourself in a real tough situation. Justin Thomas also sitting there at 2-over. Mickelson is, well, he's 1-under for his round today through three holes. So he's still got his second round pretty much to play. He's at +3. 1-under on the day through his first three holes, +3. If he can get that down to even par or one over, knock a couple shots off, he at least would make things exciting for all the Phil supporters that are cheering him on this weekend. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. We're asking who are some of the best combos in all of sports as far as father-son combinations. And
Just got a bunch in that I did not think of that are pretty obvious. I'm embarrassed I didn't think of.
We're going to get people that are going to call us out. That's why we put on our text line.
Well, no, personally, I'm embarrassed I didn't think of these because it's so obvious. Mario and Michael Andretti, Al and Alan Sir Jr., Dale Earnhardt and Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Okay. Of course, obviously, the racing people. I wish we had a racing guy on the show.
Yeah, right? Ken Norton Sr., Ken Norton Jr., someone said it's Bonds and not even close. Someone else pointed out Joe Jellybean and Kobe Bryant. Best overall, man. Yeah, I mean, Bonds and Griffey, I think when you combine the two, that's probably as good as it will get.
Yeah.
I mean, Mario and Michael Andretti, though, and if you're Al and Allen Sir Jr., when you throw in those guys,
yeah, because
it's also real close.
You you know, I guess if the criteria is just pure talent, I think the Bonds and the success that they had. Now, of course, there's always going to be that asterisk next to Barry Bonds' name. Clearly, I think from a talent standpoint, statistical standpoint, I think the Bonds have to be up there. You know, Archie was a decent quarterback, but you look at the success that Peyton and Eli, two brothers, had. If you could combine that, you know, and say, well, he had two guys and they both made it into the NFL. He actually had more than two boys, but two of them were NFL quarterbacks. Do you know the rarity to be able to get two NFL quarterbacks from one family? I mean, that in itself is pretty amazing, to get two professional athletes out of one family. But yeah, those racing ones were pretty obvious, Caleb. I do.
All three I should have thought of right away. I mean, and you could keep going with, racing ones. There are plenty.
I mean, that's what I was in my head. I was going through sports and trying to think, and I started with baseball and was thinking basketball. Now, football, are there others that we're missing? Racing, obviously, we completely overlooked the sport. Tennis. Can't really.
I mean,
think
you could even throw in like Yannick Noah and Joachim Noah.
Yes, you could. You could. They're not going to win it.
No, but they're both very accomplished in their sports.
But I guess if our criteria is father and son combinations in sports, well, I guess, you know, they were both well known enough. 46862. Who do you have as far as the ones we're missing with the father-son duos in sports? 46862. And again, happy Father's Day to all of the dads out there. Game sevens this weekend. Will we have just the one with the Milwaukee Bucks playing at Brooklyn, that game coming up tomorrow night? Or will we have three? Because we have a chance that with Philly and Atlanta playing a game six tonight, along with Utah and the Clippers, that we could have up to three game sevens. And I think there's a good chance we will. I look at those matchups tonight, Philly at Atlanta. Philly is desperate, backs against the wall. It's do or die in Philadelphia. This is the best chance they've had to get to an Eastern Conference Finals. And it's going to be an embarrassment to everybody that is associated with Philadelphia if they get beat by the Atlanta Hawks. And so I think they come out, play the best game they played in the series, but I still don't know if that's enough. You know, playing this Atlanta team, you've got to give them a lot of credit. You've got to give Nate McMillan a lot of credit. They've matched up well against Philly. Ben Simmons has been almost a liability when you get late in the game. But I think Philadelphia has a chance to win that game in Atlanta. And then they've got Utah at the Clippers. And I still think Utah bounces back, although Donovan Mitchell, we don't know exactly what the status of that ankle is. Game time decision. The Clippers are going to be playing without Kawhi. I don't know what to expect. Injuries just have left me having no real clue as to who wins that game. But you've got a chance. If Utah wins at L.A. and Philly wins at Atlanta, that you're going to have three game sevens this weekend. So great weekend for sports. U.S. Open, three game sevens in the NBA, and a whole lot more with the Comets opening their series down in Allen. We'll come back. We'll wrap it up on a Friday edition of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Father's Day weekend this weekend, and we're saluting some of the best and the greatest of all time in sports, father and son duos. And of course, we missed a few, but we were caught up on our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Caleb, who have we got?
Oh, quite a few. Rick Barry, his sons Brent and John Barry. Also, Arvydas Sabonis and his son Domantas Sabonis plays for the Pacers. Bobby and Brett Hall. Those are some of the other ones that came in on the text line.
And, of course, we hope that all of the fathers have a terrific weekend this weekend. Have a terrific day on Sunday. That does it for this Friday edition of the Sports Rush. Got to thank our guest, Austin Mack, who joined us in our first hour. That was terrific. If you didn't get it live, make sure you check up on Austin Mack on our podcast. That'll be up in about another hour. And then also Justin Cohn from the Journal Gazette. Comet Hockey on our sister station, 1190 WOWO and 107.5 FM tonight from Allen. Game one of the best of five Western Conference Finals. We've got Tin Caps Baseball right here on this radio station. That's it for another week of the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.